1935, the Lions win the NFL championship. The Detroit Tigers take the World Series. The Red Wings bring home Lord Stanley's Cup. Joe Louis begins his rise to world domination. This transforms the Motor City into Detroit, City of Champions.
All right, we are sticking it in the ground. It is Detroit, City of Champions. I'm Jamie Flanagan.
Charles Avison.
Discovering the stories. Well, I'm discovering the stories that Charles has researched and written about. The amazing, amazing year 1935 in sports, in history, in Detroit specifically. And how it all turned our city, turned the fair city of Detroit into the sports machine it is.
Yeah, one of the great sports capitals of the world was born in 1935. The history of Detroit sports, when we talk about the history of Detroit sports, there's, you know, a lot of times when you use those words, history of Detroit sports, your first thought might go to Ty Cobb.
Yeah, yeah.
Your second thought might go to like Gordie Howe or Bobby Lane or these guys. But there's an entire chapter that happens in between all of that.
Yeah.
In that one chapter, in a single year, Detroit was changed from merely a baseball town that had never won a World Series. In the course of just one year, Detroit was changed into one of the great sports towns in the country. One single year.
That's it. Like I said, we're sticking it in the ground. We're dealing with golf. And
you got your Hagen Jr.
I got my Walter Hagen putter here, wood shaft. People watching it. Again, thank you for listening to the podcast or watching the podcast, either on YouTube or Facebook or an audio listening device of your choosing. We're everywhere, man. It's like Spotify, Pandora, a couple Cracker Jacks boxes with string tied between them.
Yeah.
We're everywhere.
Mention YouTube?
I did. YouTube and Facebook. And people watch and comment. Somebody named George was commenting on YouTube earlier. Thanks.
Welcome, George. Appreciate the comment. We're growing the channel and there's a lot of stuff. I see a lot of Detroit sports. I follow all kinds of Detroit sports videos on YouTube.
Yeah.
A lot of them are talking about the Lions. A lot of them talking about a little bit of Detroit, like Tiger history, a little bit to a certain extent, but from what I've seen, we're the only podcast that's just pure history.
Yeah.
It's just pure Detroit sports history. That's
so,
from what I've seen.
Thank you. If you haven't so far, subscribe or collect or whatever it is on the app that you're doing and, follow along. So subscribe to it and we appreciate you doing that. Tell a couple friends too. That's always extraordinarily
helpful. Yep, and hit the like button right now. We should have one of those little graphics that's like, it's got a little thumb. It demonstrates if it's somebody for the visual, because I know when I'm watching a little YouTube video, if I see the little finger come up and click the button on the screen.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like a little reminder. And you go, click it, because every little like helps. It really just it helps the algorithm. Every comment really helps.
It does. So like, subscribe, leave a comment. We appreciate you. DetroitCityOfChampions.com is the website where, as I mentioned, Charles did extraordinary years of research, pulling all these original sources together into a trilogy of books. Those are available on his website.
DetroitCityOfChampions.com, or you can come and actually, talk Detroit sports to me in person. I'm at the 12 Oaks Mall in Novi and also Partridge Creek in Clinton Township. There's a Michigan art store there called Inspire Marketplace, and I'm in one of those two stores pretty much every day.
So
you come in there and start mentioning either baseball or Detroit sports,
and you are going to get an earful.
It's kind of like, I almost think of it, it's almost kind of like those barber shops or whatever I'll be just sitting there doing my work and then somebody will come up and start talking about baseball or Detroit sports, and it's like everything I'm doing just gets set aside, and we just sit there and talk about stuff.
So we were we're here recording out of the Podcast Your Voice studios on the border of Southfield and Berkeley, Michigan, and there was a show that I helped produce. I help other people launch podcasts too, and there was a show recording earlier today, and I had he's like, "Well, so what podcast do you do?" And I'm like, "You got a couple minutes?"
Yeah.
And so I told him about the Man Cave Happy Hour, Animal Talk, and then I was telling him about Detroit City of Champions. He came back in today, and this was when we met a few weeks ago. He came back in today to do the show, and he brought some friends with him to be on the show with him. It's called the Plant Life Union Group. It's all about life on the plant floor and all the shenanigans and things that happen. It's pretty cool. They're off and having fun. But he was like, no, tell him about the championship thing.
Yeah.
Tell him. And he was so excited about it. And I was like, all right. And they were all like, oh, my God, seriously? Oh, my God, seriously? So
this was crazy. Is that it's? Just,
I love sharing the story.
It's this huge. It's this incredible season where you've got 33 championships. You got the first three championships. First championships for the Tigers, Lions, Red Wings. The rise of Joe Louis. All the stuff that happens out at the end with the Champions Day party at the Masonic Temple. The plaque. It's the biggest story. I mean, what sports story could be bigger? What season has ever been better?
Yeah,
greater, no. More important, anything like this? Yeah. That's what I mean. Like this is a big deal,
right?
And we're on episode 72.
I know.
I'm having
so much fun.
I'm having a blast. So it's like we're on episode 72. What other seasons in the history of I know we've said this is a common trope we've said on the show,
right?
But how many seasons do you know of?
None.
That are merit 72 episodes of a show to describe it.
Like Doctor Strange.
It's only one.
Only one way.
Yeah.
Only one way.
Yeah. That's what I mean. It's like this is
all right, Tony, only one way.
Yeah, this is a huge deal. And this is for the first time ever. This show is the first time that this season has ever been explored. Ever.
I love how deep we're going with it.
Totally. Absolutely. And we are exploring this thing step by step. And if you're a new listener, you can listen to the live shows right now, or you can also it's all archived. It started at episode one, and they're clustered in
the Tigers cluster and a Red Wings.
Yeah,
cluster,
we do them in order. You know, we start with we're going to start the background.
Cluster.
Yeah, yeah. But so, we've been covering it basically like step by step and going through it. And you can just see anybody that's been following along and been up to this point. It's the story is incredible, and there's so much when you dive into these individual stories like the athletes, like we're in Walter Hagen today, mm-hmm. and when you start to dig into these stories, they're just remarkable. Like Walter Hagen, like when we're done with this, we're Walter Hagen is awesome. This is a Detroit guy.
Gar Wood just blew me away.
Exactly. We get to Walter Hagen, Gar Wood.
Yeah.
Gar Wood. That's what I'm saying. Like I was saying even from the beginning that this is going to be the greatest story that anybody's. This was my favorite story of the entire City of Champions was Gar Wood.
Yeah,
and Gar Wood, like,
that dude is a
where?
Monster.
But where do you ever hear anybody talking about Gar Wood?
No.
It's one of the great stories of all of just not just Detroit sports history, but like one of the great sports stories ever told.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I mean. So it's just, I mean, there's so much to dive down, and we got another episode today.
But we're puttering around with. Walter Hagen.
Yeah.
As I got my putter here again for the people watching, you can see.
You love the putter. Your putter.
I'm going to use
it's
this.
It's your new mascot.
I'm going to take it out. It's a drag that it's fall. People listen whenever, wherever, however. So it's fall right now. And, well, at the end of summer. And I need to
get out. You can go in the fall.
I need to get out.
Scotland golfing.
I know.
It's like
I need to
golf
get out.
In Scotland. That seems like it's always raining every time I golfed over there.
I got to grab my boy and get out there.
Yeah.
So we said thanks to George earlier. And we want to say thanks to Chris. Chris checking in as well. So
hey,
thanks,
Chris.
And we're checking in with Walter Hagen, teeing it up. And the episode is titled The American Invasion.
Yes.
Last time it was he moved to Detroit.
Moved to Detroit.
And
Gar Wood is a classic example of a Detroiter, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
A lot of these people that came to Detroit, like Gar Wood was not native to Detroit,
no.
but he became a Detroit icon. A lot of these people moved to Detroit from elsewhere around the country because of the rise of the auto industry.
And
they got into it in some capacity, and then they moved to Detroit. Joe Louis was not native to Detroit. He moved from Alabama up to Detroit for pursuing, his family was pursuing work. So that's what Detroit was in this early, in the mm-hmm. early 1900s, was a city on the rise, and it was attracting people and talent from all across the country.
That's when my grandfather rolled in.
Exactly, that's what I'm saying. So Walter Hagen is much like basically every other Detroiter of this era, which is seeing this, you know, this new rising city with new opportunities, and he comes there, of course, to be the new golf pro for Oakland Hills.
Yeah.
And so that's what we were talking about last week. We talked about last week as well how he wrapped up the 1990. That was in 1919, and how he wrapped up the year by winning his first U.S. Open.
Whoop, whoop.
Yeah, so he wins his first U.S. Open, and so it's where we pick off today in 1920, is that Walter Hagen now is, he's a bona fide star. He was already a star, but now he's a massive star because at this exact moment, in 1919, besides the U.S. Open, there's a list of other Open championships that he'd won in that same year. He won the Western Open. He won the Metropolitan Open. He won the North Open, the South Open, the West Coast of Florida Open. So it's just he's winning Open championships all around the country.
Well, and celebrity in golf changed because we talked about the war and how, you know, during the wartime, they were charging admission.
That's what changed golf.
To the golf matches to raise money for the war effort.
Yes.
And when they were done, they were like, well, we don't necessarily have to stop charging admission.
Exactly.
And allowing these riffraff into. And so it's like,
they were letting the riffraff in because they were trying to raise, they were trying to do their good deed.
Sure,
and they
could,
that's how they justified letting the riffraff in.
Well,
but they're like, holy crap, we've never seen so much money come into the coffers of this country club before.
Perhaps we could keep letting the riff and the raff in and take their money. And
well, if we dress them up a little bit and clean them up a little bit, they won't even be such riffraff anymore.
Sure.
You know?
So,
but originally,
but that changed the celebrity of golf. So he was really
the more money that comes into play, you know, people read in the newspaper, and you know, before this, before the World War One, he had won the biggest tournament, that the biggest prize at a tournament was $1,000.
$20.
No, $1,000. Yeah, he won the first ever $1,000 purse.
Woo!
And usually the purse for a championship was made, or any tournament was made up just of the people at the club just chipping in, putting money into a hat and saying, well, come on, we need a little bit more money because we want to really bring some people in and have a prize. And they're like, we got $1,000 raised.
Woo.
And then in the course of World War One, Walter Hagen said himself, he said that he himself was responsible for raising $225,000.
Yeah.
And that's just in 3 years that they were doing the Red Cross, you know, exhibitions.
So
and
really,
all told, they raised $1 million.
Yep. So this is celebrity. It
really
is.
Totally. Well, that shifted golf, and you never see. I never see it. And I did a cursory search on the internet about World War One, its effect on golf, and I don't see anything. I don't know how much people talk about this story, but it's a huge component of golf. Like, this is the era that was what was the tipping point, the trigger that turned golf from just, you know, people that are just, you know, throwing coins in a hat to pay a championship, or now it's like an actual, like, you get a payday from winning these things. Like, this is a big time payday.
And without that, we would never have the John Daly smoking a cigarette, staring down Tiger Woods.
Well, it was there's a lot of things we wouldn't have as a result. Yeah. Well, there was a lot of things you wouldn't have because this is what led. This was, like I say, the turning point that golf basically became a rising, prestigious, and financially lucrative profession for athletes to engage.
Yes.
You know, I mean, Walter Hagen was already talking about going into baseball before all this, and you know, he was talking about, because there was probably, you know, there was probably more money in baseball than there was in golf.
All right, so I got lost. So what was the list of opens he won here? Was it 1919?
This was 1919, the same year he won the U.S. Open.
Okay.
He won the U.S. Open, which was a national, and then he won the Western Open, the Metropolitan Open, and then the North Open, the South Open, the West Coast of Florida Open.
Okay, these are all United.
It's all around
states.
The U.S. So it's like, so you can see like the Western Open, the North Open, the South.
Yeah.
So there's like different opens around the country, but then he won the U.S. Open overall, the national and all four corners of the. You know, I guess there's not an East Open, but you know, but he won a Northwest, South, and then he won the West Coast of Florida Open. So he's like, he's just racking up championships everywhere he goes.
Yeah.
And this is all in the same year. Like, he's just, you know, he's just crushing it. He's the number one golfer in the United States. And so, in 1920, so this is the following year, 1920. The British Open comes back, and keep in mind the World War One has ended in 1918,
right?
And then the 1919 was the first U.S. Open since World War One began, and then 1920 was now the first year the British Open, which is called the Open. You know, we're saying the British Open just to kind of distinguish it. A lot of people do that. So the British Open 1920 was the first year it was making its comeback since the beginning of World War One. So the last one was played in 1914, and Harry Vardon, whose name has come up numerous times, was the last British Open champion prior to World War One. And so it's a big deal. The British Open is coming back. And for 1920, it's the first one since World War One started. So it's been 6 years since this thing happened, and this is Walter Hagen spends a great deal of time talking about just how big of a deal this was, especially in the British Isles.
Yeah.
The British Open was the biggest sporting event it was the one that they took the most pride in Britain at this time. It was a huge deal. And so that's why the reason I title this the American Invasion is because we talked about how the U.S. Open at Brookline, the greatest game ever played in that.
Yeah.
That they talk about in that was the British invasion, right? Yeah. Harry Vardon, Ted Ray, they come over from Britain to add all this gravity to the U.S. Open. But in this case, you have the opposite happen because now you've got the greatest golfer in America who's won just a litany of championships. He now is going to come over to Britain to challenge these sort of same guys. But now it's like 6 years later, since the Brookline, or 7 years later since Brookline. And now he's the guy, right? So he's coming over.
I'm talking to Chris. Pay no mind to me.
So he's
Chris and I are
okay.
Having
you guys doing your own little thing. Okay.
You keep telling the story. Okay. Chris and I.
I'll talk to the wall instead of you. You do your thing. I'll talk to the wall over here. So we got this thing going.
I'll let you.
You're
in.
Good. You're talking.
No, I'll let you in on a thing. So it was the whole. I said Dr. Strain. There's how many people tell this story. And it's the only one.
Oh, nice. So, okay, that's
so
great.
He sent that, and I saved it.
So you're
going to
put some meme cut screens in?
Yeah. So while you're talking and telling a story, I'm doing silly things on the video.
No, it's you're practicing some meme cut screens.
It is.
So now, like I say, so Hagen is going to be the guy coming from America going to Britain, and as we're going to see in today's episode, again, the reason called American Invasion, it's a catchy title, whatever, but it kind of summarizes what the theme of today's episode is going to be about. Because America, in the 7 years since the Brookline championship, mm-hmm. U.S. Open, and 4 years of war, golf in America has been sort of like isolated. You see what I'm saying? Like British golf everybody in Britain is fighting the war. America entered the war in 1917, of course. But in this course of time, there was quite a few things happening in America that the British had never even had no idea.
Sure.
And so when Hagen comes over, they're going to be like, oh my God,
what?
Like what's going on?
Golf
like it's
tees?
Like,
what?
Like it was this, it was like an, like a new, like he had the tees weren't around yet.
Yeah.
But the tees are going to come in. Walter Hagen's the guy that popularized the golf key. Not now, but we're going to get to that. Okay, That's a phenomenal story. That's going to be an amazing story. Hagen is in everything. He's the guy that, like, the whole history of golf, modern golf, revolves around everything Hagen is doing. That's what's so great. But what we're going to see today's episode is that the whole, like, there's so many things we're going to recognize as everyday regular things in today's golf that all started with this, with Hagen's first trip to Britain, when they're going, what is he doing?
Yeah.
Right? Like golf, the seed of golf had been planted in America. Professional golf is growing up over there with an American style. Mm-hmm. You see what I'm saying? American flourish, and that's going to come back to Britain and affect Britain in a huge way. And that's really the crux of and it's going to revolve around this 1920 U.S. Open.
Okay,
so that's where that's the focus today. So anyway, so Hagen, just a little kind of quick summary. Hagen was a little broke at this moment, probably too much
investments and stuff. Yeah.
So he's a little short on money. So the original guy, his name is Al Wallace, who was a stockbroker, who had actually was the one that got him into the Oakland Hills Country Club, mm-hmm. Financially backed him to go to this 1920 U.S. Open. So that's a little mention there. And then so Hagen, before he left, there was a story that he just knew. I don't think he like followed it, but somebody either told him or something. But Johnny McDermott, who was another care, he was the big name guy in the you know, in the Brookline U.S. Open, he, you know, the American from Brooklyn, he's like the best American golfer in the Brookline tournament or U.S. Open. He when he went to compete in the British Open in 1912, the British press like just tore him apart, like just terrible, you know, terrible stories written about him. He's like, I don't know the substance of him, but he was not treated well, at least in his opinion, by the British press. And so Walter Hagen was like, well, that's not going to happen to me. So what I'm going to do is I am going to bring my own press guy over, right? So he's got a friend named H.B. Martin from the New York Globe, and he's friends with him. And so he enlists H.B. Martin to say, well, look, even if the British press doesn't cover me well, I'm gonna have you write the real story. So at least the American press is not gonna, you know, follow with the British press, and that's gonna make it all. At least I'm gonna get half good coverage.
So from my understanding, Rodney Dangerfield based his Caddyshack character on Walter Hagen's 1920 British Open appearance.
Could be with the little guy walking around.
I don't know.
That's not true. That's not true.
I digress.
Hey, what Ronnie? That character of Ronnie Dangerfield was not based on anybody except for the genius in Rodney's brain. Okay,
like, I'm sorry.
That was an original creation.
But he shook things up. He came over. He shook things.
Oh, 100%. That's what we're gonna see. The first step to shaking that up was to have, though, his own press guy that's going to give him fair coverage for the U.S. press, right?
Right.
And so what H.B. Martin did to finance his trip, again, because Hagen couldn't afford to, you know, he could barely afford himself, so he's not going to be able to afford to bring his own newspaper guy over. So the newspaper guy, H.B. Martin, has got to have his own. I got a picture of H.B. Martin, too. That's one of the slides I sent you.
Oh, yeah, okay.
So the way he's going to finance his mission is he is going to make a deal with a company called the Bell Syndicate, okay? And that Bell Syndicate, what it is it was like a collection of newspapers across the country, and the idea was that he was going to send a story, like one story back for the Bell Syndicate, and then they would have the rights to publish that story in all of their, it was actually, what, I have 50 newspapers.
Oh, wow, okay. Wow.
So 50 newspapers would get coverage of the British Open with the number one American golfer and whether he could win that championship or not. So that's an interesting story.
Yeah.
And so they financed his trip over there as in exchange for making a deal on that. And then this is one of the first examples of this type of a deal being put together. You know, somebody like an American athlete traveling over, followed by his own, you know, by in essence a press corps.
Yeah.
And then that press corps is financed by a syndication in America. You know what I mean? Where they're all paying a little bit to get the story, and then he's the one that, you know, that are paying his bills. So it's a reciprocal deal. This is one of the first examples of this. You know, this is 1920. And so, you know, so once again, they're setting this, you know, they're setting the precedent for this, you know, for, you know, that element of modern sports. And so, so Hagen and HB, HB Martin get to New York to get on the boat. Right. And then in the ship, so after World War One, there was all of a sudden the floodgates are open for people wanting to go to Europe. People have not been to Britain or France or anything in four or five years now.
Yeah.
So there's like, so shipping, like getting on a ship just for vacations or just seeing people you know or whatever, it's like the hottest thing around. Like you cannot, it's like, you know, just to get on a ship is incredibly expensive. Not only is it expensive, but they're running ships constantly. They're running ships so fast that Hagen and H.B. Martin, when they get to the port, their ship is left.
Ugh.
And it was not because they were late. It left because it was full, and they were like, well, there'll be another one. We got to go. We, you know, as soon as we can take these people over, drop them off, we can come back and pick up, you know, and bring, come down back with more people.
Yeah.
So they're just running ships as fast as they can. They don't care about the schedule, right? And so Hagen and, Hagen and H.B. Martin, they catch the next boat, which is called the Mauritania, which is a famous ship, the Mauritania. And so, and on this ship is this woman, is an actress named Constance Talmadge.
Mm.
And we got a slide of her too.
Connie.
Yeah, Connie Talmadge. And so Hagen talks about in his book, what's kind of cool is one of my things I love about history is that, you know, he talks, you know, Hagen's talking about, he's like, that's where I met Connie Talmadge. She's one of the famous Talmadge sisters. She's like the most famous actress in the country at this time. And of course, in her career, she did 80 movies.
Oh, wow.
That's one of the things I love about history. And it's tough, though, because you see like a little side story and you're like, man, I want to look into this, you know, and you start to follow. It's just like, it's almost like watching YouTube. You
down click the rabbit hole.
Yeah, you click on like hippopotamus fights or something. Think about hippopotamus fights an alligator, and the next thing you know, you're like, you're totally into like, you know, you're another planet.
You're
So it's kind of like that with history. You know, that's one of the things I love about it is that you just totally get attracted. So I was like, I never really, I mean, I've heard the name, I guess, but I never looked into her. And so you start to go down the rabbit hole a little bit on some of this history stuff. And she's cool. If you know, she's got two sisters that were both Hollywood actresses. And at the time they're called the Talmadge sisters, and they're just in like a ton of movies. They're superstar celebrities. And on the ship, Hagen is like, oh my God, it's Connie Talmadge.
I can't believe who's here.
Yeah, it's Connie. Yeah. And she's like, oh my God, it's Walter Hagen, the number one golfer in the world, you know? So who knows? I'm not trying to say there was there's nobody know. He doesn't talk about the love interest in there. But he does talk about the fact that he made great friends with her at the very least.
Okay.
At the very least, he was fantastic. They made great friends with her. And Connie Talmadge. And so Hagen said, in all of his haste to get to the ship, to get everything going, all this, he had forgot to make any type of like hotel reservations in London. And so Connie says, well, it's a good thing for you. I usually book two hotel reservations, and when I get there, I kind of decide which one I want to take. So I have a room at the Savoy, and I have a room at the Carlton. She goes, I'm going to take the Savoy. You can have the Carlton. So she gives Hagen this room for him to stay at. So Hagen's like, oh, thanks. It's just kind of a great little story, like, you know, that you see these things. And Hagen's like, that's where I met Connie Talmadge. She's on a ship. Yeah. And he starts, spends a little time talking about how cool she was and stuff. And so, I mean, like, that's one of the great things about history is, Hagen is talking from a completely, this is 1920.
Sure.
It's a different era where most people today have never heard of her. I really did not either. I'm not trying to,
And back then, gentlemen didn't kiss and tell.
Yeah, exactly.
Did you kiss her?
He doesn't talk about any kissing and telling in there either. He'll say he danced with a girl in a gazebo till dawn, and it's like, is that all you did? Who knows?
Is that code for something there, buddy?
Yeah. So he talks about her in there, and so it's just kind of a cool thing. Like, that's if you get a chance, look up Constance Talmadge or the Talmadge sisters. It's just they're just kind of interesting,
Yeah.
So she sets him up at a hotel at the Carlton, and then that night, the first night that Hagen gets to London, they get their hotel room set up and they go to dinner, and the dinner was like sort of a chance for, because Hagen arrives there's a reporter for the Daily Mail named Bob Howard. Daily Mail, of course, is a British, famous British newspaper. Mm-hmm. And Bob Howard is there. He's a Daily Mail reporter. And he's there right as Hagen's like getting off the ship saying, hey, can I get an interview with you? And, we'll go to dinner tonight. I'll interview you. I want to put you in the papers. Of course, you're the American, the new biggest hotshot on the block. Sure, I want to talk to you. And so Hagen agrees. And so I've got a little quote I want to read about this.
It's a trap.
It's a trap.
It's a trap. Where's our it's a trap?
Yeah, the Admiral Akbar.
Yeah, it's a trap.
So, spoiler alert, it's trap. Right?
I was kidding, but
is. You know where I'm going with this stuff, Jamie. We're in sync, man. I'm introducing a newspaper writer who Hagen's bringing by, to make sure he gets the right perspective.
No. Nope.
And then there's as soon as he gets there's a British reporter. He's never been there before. Johnny McDermott got, so you're following.
Yep.
And so, I've got a quote for him to explain what went down with this interview. Okay, so at the station, again, this is out of the Walter Hagen story by the Hague himself. So this is Hagen's own autobiography. Mm-hmm. So at the station in London, so Dickie, which is H.B. Martin, so that's what he calls him, Dickie. So at the station in London, Dickie and I were met by Bob Howard, golf writer for the Daily Mail. He wanted an interview, and since we were busy claiming luggage, I suggested he meet us up for dinner later. So several hours passed before we were seated at a table in a popular restaurant he had named for the meeting. His first question over his lobster and beer, a combination of food as silly as his question, was, what do you think of Deal Links, Mr. Hagen? And Deal Links is where he's going to be playing this course. It's in Kent in London, or Kent in England. It's southeast coast of England, like on the ocean. Like on the ocean side, this is an oceanside course, and it's called Deal. And so, anyways, that's what he says. So that's what they call the course, is Deal. So, what do you think of Deal Links, Mr. Hagen? I told him what he already knew, that this was my first trip to England, and of course I had never seen Deal or any other foreign links. I explained that I had picked up a magazine on board ship which carried a layout of the course at Deal, but owing to the fact that the map did not show the undulations, I couldn't make a definitive statement. However, presuming it to be fairly flat and knowing the bogey of the course to be 78, it would be rated par 72 in our American method. Do you like to pitch and run to the green? He asked. Can you play either one? I asked. Yes, he said. I told him I preferred pitching to the flag. How do you like putting? A fast or slow green? He inquired. I prefer a fast green, I explained, because I happen to be the type of golfer whose best touch is with a putter. No one could outputt me, but I didn't tell him that. Substantially, that was the interview. He left us, and we finished dinner and returned to the Carlton. I was looking forward eagerly to making a few practice rounds at Deal the next day. I had high hopes of taking that famous British Open Cup back to the United States with me. So that's the night that he arrives. That's
Rita Skeeter gets back to the...
You want to read the headline from the next day?
Rita Skeeter had her way with it. And, what's it say?
So here's the headline from the very next day.
Oh, God.
Cocky doodle doo. Walter Hagen, boastful American champion, is boyishly confident of winning the British Cup, which only once in its history has ever left British shores. Hagen says that no golfer should be over 72 around Deal. He intends to show us how to play the game, and he prefers to pitch to the flag so close he doesn't have to putt. But he is going to putt to prove he can putt. That's the headline. That's the intro to the article. Nice coverage of him. That's the coverage he gets.
Did you even listen to me?
Did you even listen to a word I said? So that's the coverage he gets.
Did you pull a Mitch album and have this written before you came?
Yeah. So that's the coverage he gets when he first lands there. And so it convinces him immediately, well, I'm glad I brought my own reporter now because this is the only way I'm going to get a fair shake,
right?
Yeah,
yeah.
So there is a whole section here where he talks about he actually was pretty upset about this and about that whole thing. And so what was interesting is that he knew the editor, the owner of the Daily Mail. Uh-huh.
And we're going to stop it there. The owner of that paper, Lord Northcliffe, and we're going to see how Walter Hagen is going to confront him. What happens? What happens? We'll find out next time on Detroit City of Champions. We're going to take a little break right now. Thank you for listening, following along. Like, subscribe, leave a comment. We appreciate you here. We're going to chop this episode in two because we just went on and on this time around. So we're going to break it up. We'll be back with more of Walter Hagen trying to get into his first British Open and see how he does, bringing his own reporter along. He's going to confront the paper owner here coming up after this hatchet job by one of his reporters. We're going to see how that works out and how he ends up playing in his very first British Open. All that and a whole lot more. Thanks for being with us on Detroit City of Champions.